This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis.
Morning, everybody. We're back. Say good morning, Robin.
Good morning. That first hour flew.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. So I'm missing our emails from our buddy John B, though.
I know, me too.
So hopefully he'll, maybe he's just sleeping in.
Be having a sleep-in day.
That would be good. I felt like I needed one today. So
I felt like you needed one, too.
All right, we've got Richard on the line. By the way, our call-in phone number is 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680, all the same. You can dial the numbers, you can dial the letters. The numbers are for the alphabetically challenged, 922-6680. But if you like the idea that it's WCBM, the station you're listening to, and 680 on the dial, that's the phone number, WCBM 680.
Nobody has a dial anymore.
922-6680. I know nobody has a dial. That is the illuminated digital image on your radio. Richard, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Al. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning, Richard.
Hey, Alan, I think one of us misunderstood Robin's question about the fishing and the limit and all that. I thought she had asked if all six on the boat had finished, had got their limit, can the boat continue to fish?
No, I meant if the person got his fish.
Individual.
And if the boat gets the limit, how about that, too? That's a good question. I didn't think of it that way.
Oh, okay. I thought that's what you were asking.
No,
she's saying if I'm the first one up and the first fish on the line is a 19-inch fish and it goes in the box, am I done? Am I supposed to sit down? In a perfect world, yeah. But in reality, it ain't going to happen.
How about if the boat reaches
the
limit?
That's not how we did it. Whenever we went out, we would draw numbers. And when the boat was limited out, you know, we didn't do each individual fish.
Right.
This is my fish, this is your fish.
Right.
It all went in the box, and the mate filleted them up, and we just divided the meat equally, whether one fish was caught or whether all six were caught.
Right.
Then you just went in turn. I mean, one person on the boat may have caught two keepers.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, but that's just how we worked it. You know, that's how we had it worked out as our group.
Right.
But once the six were caught, the boat is done fishing.
Yes, correct.
Got it.
Yes. That's.
I just wanted to make sure of that, because I know our captain, and he wouldn't even allow himself and the mate to take a fish.
Wow.
You know, he was an ex-DNR officer. He was retired DNR. So
well, that makes a difference. Yes, that's for sure.
I mean, not that he couldn't have, but he was a good captain. I'm not, you know. We did very well with him, but yeah, once you had your limit, you know, we were heading in.
Oh yeah, I mean that's every charter boat I've ever fished on, but everybody fished till the boat got the limit. Yes, exactly right.
Yep. All right, but I misunderstood the question.
No,
sorry, Robin.
No, you're fine. No, because I like looking at it both ways. I was just curious if you let somebody else get a turn, or if it was every man for themselves.
I would say it's up to the individual party how they have it worked out. I mean, that's just how we did it, and everybody was fine with it.
Yeah.
You know, that it's nice when everybody can work together.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been salmon fishing on the Great Lakes and so forth, and fishing sometimes that people don't know very well. And we do the thing about taking turns, and, you know, somebody misses a fish or the fish gets off, hey, oh, well, it's the next guy's turn, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we had it. See, just again, was the same group of friends went every year. You're not talking about six people that didn't know each other.
You had, right, exactly.
You had to boat the fish in order for that fish to count as your turn.
Right.
So
gotcha. Gotcha, buddy.
All right, hey.
All right, Richard. Hey, look, enjoy Tennessee whenever you get a chance to get back down there again.
Heading down tomorrow.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
Thanks, Alan. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right. We do have Rudy on the line, but we're going to go to Glenn first, and then Rudy, the rest of the hour is yours if you want the whole thing or not. So, good morning, Glenn. How are you?
Hey, Alan, Rob. How you doing?
Morning, Glenn.
How you doing, buddy?
I got to do some turkey hunting, but I haven't heard or seen anything.
Yeah, they're being a little bit elusive. They didn't play nice yesterday. So
they come out when you're not around.
Yep, probably night or I went in the last part of the evening about 6 o'clock on.
Right.
Just they're probably out first thing in the morning, probably.
Yeah, the best thing to do is get up there early in the morning. I mean, if you're in the evening, you can see where they roost and then go out and set up on the roost in the morning and call them in.
Mm.
You know, that's what my buddy does. I don't even know that he goes out in the evening and roosts a bird. I think he just knows where they are and plays with them. But, you know, he's been playing with them all season. He's taken two off that property so far. And he's done. I mean, he's not even carrying a gun, but, you know, he just went and called for me, and he just likes to go. He just likes to turkey hunt. And he was out the day before, or he was out Saturday taking pictures, in the spot where we were hunting. There's a believe it or not, there's a pink flamingo. There's two of them that mark the property line. And we're 40 yards back from, or 50 yards back from the property line. And the pink flamingo is, you know, 40 yards from where we sit. And this big gobbler came out and was standing right next to the pink flamingo. So you've got a big gobbler in full strut and a pink flamingo in the same picture. And that's the gobbler that we were trying to target. He's huge. The two birds that he's taken both had 11 inch beards. One was 20 and one was 24 pounds, inch and a half spurs, which is a mature bird. This bird is bigger than either of those. So, you know, we're looking at a 25, 26 pound gobbler with a 11, 12 inch beard. That's the one we were after. And, he had taken photos of it as of Saturday. So, you know. So we were hoping and we were pretty sure that we heard that bird a couple times, but just could not get it to come in. So that's the way it goes. So,
yeah.
All right. Well,
take care and everything. I heard anybody's got this thing.
No, I think we're good.
That's good.
Yep.
Have a wonderful day.
All right, buddy. Good luck on the turkeys.
Great.
See you, buddy. Okay. Bye-bye. All right. Rudy Lukakovich is our guest this morning, and he is, did I say your name right, Rudy?
Yes, you did.
I thought so. Rudy, give us a little bit of background. I know you've called before, and we've baited you out of your comfort zone a few times when we were talking about catch and release rockfish. But here we are. Today's the first day of the summer season, and, you know, anglers are urged to use circle hooks for live bait fishing or, you know, live lining or chumming and so forth. And you're the one that did the studies on the catch and release. You did the research. So tell us a little bit about how that all worked and how that went down and what prompted that.
Okay. The reason we did the study was back in 1990 when the moratorium was first lifted.
Yes.
We were limited to a couple of years of just the fall season. The first year we had a spring season, it was limited to the month of May with a 36-inch size limit.
I remember that.
Those fish that you're targeting that time of year, they're migratory. They're not holding on structure. So chumming wasn't widely practiced then. As we began to increase the season through June and July and lowered the size limit to 28 inches, chumming picked up tremendously.
Right.
And along with the increase in chumming activity was a huge increase in the number of dead striped bass in areas of high chumming activity.
Got it.
And our customers were concerned, obviously. And we realized this was a problem. There were large numbers of dead striped bass. We'd examine these fish, and a good number of them had monofilament line protruding from their mouth, indicating a gut hook. So the idea of using circle hooks did not originate in fisheries. I wish we could take credit for it, but a charter captain who is deceased, Bob Spohr, I don't know if you knew him or not.
I knew Bob. Yeah, he tied a lot of bucktails.
Okay, yes. Yeah, yep. He came to the department and said, I've been using these circle hooks, and I think they really have some value in reducing deep hooking. Unfortunately, he came to us in like early August. We didn't have time or funding to do a study that year, but we did a couple of trips with him.
Right.
And said, yeah, we really think this has some merit. And so the next year we got funding and put in place a study to compare circle hooks with J-style bait hooks. And with catch and release fishing of any kind, whether it's a sublegal fish or you're doing it just for sport, there's two main factors that cause release mortality. One is the physical injury that you associate with deep hooking. The other is the stress from the physical exertion fighting. And the factors that influence the stress-related mortality are both water temperature, air temperature, and salinity, as we talked about before. When we did the study, we delineated fish into two different groups, either deep-hooked or shallow-hooked. And the criteria that I used was, once the fish was landed, I would look in the fish's mouth. If I could not see the point of penetration, this was a deep-hooked fish. We marked these fish with a hole punch through the upper lobe of the tail fin, and the fish came in shallow-hooked, and I considered fish that were deeply hooked in the mouth.
Right.
As shallow hook, no major organ was involved.
Right.
We removed that hook. We left the hook in place in the deep hooked fish.
Right.
Left and removed the hook from the shallow hooked fish. And over the course of a 5-month season, over 1,500 fish, we saw mortality among deep hooked fish close to 50% short term, whereas shallow hooked fish, the mortality most of the year was less than 1%. When we had
that's a little bit of a difference.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I think, it's defensible.
Yeah, it's indeed defensible. Yeah. Yes, sir.
So we saw when air temperatures were significantly higher than water temperature, the mortality shot up from like 1% to almost 20%.
Even on a shallow hook fish.
Yes, and that the only factor we can figure is the air temperature. What surprised me is we did not see an effect of water temperature on mortality, as long as some salinity was present. On the flats and freshwater, yes, definitely. But in the main bay, when salinities are maybe 5 to 8 parts per thousand, we did not see an influence on water temperature.
So my statement earlier about you pull that fish up through that warm layer at the surface, it has to do with air temperature and not particularly water temperature?
Yes. For the most part, but that's it. Then again, you're dealing with, like you're talking about the
thermoclimate.
Warm water being less capable of holding oxygen also.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a bad, stressful situation.
Yeah, no question. So the thermocline, did you do any research on thermocline, or in your knowledge, can you tell us about where the summer thermocline is in the bay?
It depends on where you are, what the temperature is, how much rainfall you get. It's a very variable,
Yeah, but situation. it's never at the top. It's always somewhere below, 3 feet ballpark.
Oh, usually, yes. Yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
Okay. Yeah. Thermocline is the layer of water that contains the most oxygen, not much below, not much above. So you're pulling a fish out of the area where it's oxygenated through the unoxygenated water, and if it's in there for any length of time flopping around on the surface, it's not very good for that fish. And then when you take it out into the warm air, you got even bigger problems.
Yeah, it's what's called a temperature oxygen squeeze.
Okay.
Colder water at the bottom can hold more oxygen because of that, but
right.
Because they have these thermocline, the water kind of stratifies, you don't
right.
get good mixing.
Right.
So fish are being forced into an area that they don't really like because it's warm, but it has more oxygen.
Got it. Got it. Okay.
Good morning, Robin.
Good morning. How are you?
I didn't want to ignore you or have you think that.
That's all right. You get to do what you got to do.
We got to go see Rudy. Rudy picked up a nice book from the Environmental Center. The lady that runs it, is it the manager of the Environmental Center, Rudy?
She is the assistant director.
Assistant director.
Yeah, she's got some great photographs in there, and she's written some really beautiful poetry to help children learn their ABCs. It's a really cool book.
Well, there you go.
I can't wait to see it.
It's personally autographed to him.
Oh, that's
wait.
Cool.
He is like the neatest thing that has ever walked the face of the earth.
Very good. Very
indeed.
Good.
Indeed.
And to your question about catch and release fishing after the limit's caught, I worked for 15 years for a captain, and he and most of his compatriots they caught their limit and they went and targeted something else. They did not just support catch and release fishing.
There you go. I like that idea. You know, I mean, there's nothing like starting your morning catching your bait. Hey, guys, here's some light spinning tackle. We're going to go catch some spot. You go out there and you have a lot of fun catching little spot and little perch and little croakers and that type of thing. And you call the spot out because you're going to use them for bait, put them in a live box or a live well or whatever they use them for or whatever they used for to contain the spot. Everything else goes back, but you've already had some little minor bites on the line. You might catch a small fish or something like that, but that's fun. The fun part. Then you go out, do some actual fishing, and you know you live line your spot. You wait. You miss a lot of fish live lining if you don't know what you're doing. And then I mean that's you make a day out of it. But once you catch your fish, and you got 2 hours left on your half day trip or whatever, what else, what are you supposed to do?
Well, bottom fishing for perch?
Yeah, white perch. Why not? They're good eating. There's not much of a limit. You can catch and release if you want, and take a bunch home to eat. And we love white perch. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and back in the day, you could do bluefish or you could do hardhead or you could, you know, anything.
Yeah, and the clients generally love the variety.
Yes, no question. No question. So, yes. So,
interesting
Rudy,
thing too. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
One of the interesting things we found doing these studies is that circle hooks are not quite as effective as J hooks in catching fish.
Right.
And so I gave this presentation to the Charter Boat Association, and they were not my most receptive audience. And they asked me, could we do a study to look at different kinds of circular hooks to see if one style had a better catching rate and still had a low deep hooking rate. So we looked at offset circle hooks, non-offset circle hooks, and the wide-gapped Kallies or Kales, K-A-H.
However you say that, K-A-H.
And surprisingly, yeah. Kales were not much more effective in reducing deep hooking than J's, but the circle hooks, there was no difference. People talk about offset versus non-offset. There was no difference in the deep hooking rate between the two, but the non-offset circle hook had a significantly higher catch rate.
Really?
Yep. So if we're kind of compelled to use a non-offset circle hook, it's a better choice.
A non-offset circle hook is a better choice.
Yep.
So you got to be really careful because there are offset circle hooks and non-offset. So you're talking about a straight hook with no bend of the barb out to one direction or the other. I agree with you. I like using circle hooks. It's a little different hook set technique though, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. Much more passive.
More passive. That's a good way to put it. So just let the fish take it and apply steady pressure, and you've got a fish hooked in the corner of the mouth rather than something that's eating the bait.
Yep. That's how it usually works.
Yeah. Cool.
I do want to agree with Dale. It's more than just temperature that initiates spawning, photo period, salinity, a number of different factors.
Right. I gotcha. Gotcha. All right, we do have a caller on the line that would like to talk to you, Rudy.
Sure.
Yeah, his name's Dennis.
Dennis, all right. Dennis, good morning, Dennis. How are you doing?
How you guys doing? How's that Queenstown wife of yours doing?
How's that what?
Queenstown wife.
Yep.
Oh, she's a queen.
I'm a Queenstown boy myself, born and raised there.
There you go. Well, she's a queen, buddy. She's a queen.
Yeah.
At least she wants me to treat her like one.
Good to hear from you guys this morning. I'm a commercial guy.
Got it.
And I won't bash nobody. I don't, because everybody has to understand how a fishery's got to work, and you got to keep managing stuff and
making
it so you can get where you want to be. But I'm glad you guys have finally realized that catch and release in the upper part of the bay, when that water's hot and the salinity is low and the oxygen level's low, them fish are already stressed out big time. And I went to a seafood summit in Annapolis and listen to the fisheries advisors from DNR and a bunch of different people in charge of fisheries, whatever, and it was 4.6 million fish was lost in 2018 and 19, the number he put out.
Rudy, did you hear that number, Rudy?
I did.
And that's extremely outrageous for people to keep catching and releasing, catching and releasing. But the problem is, I know some charter boat captains, and I won't name. They were telling me they had to hook at least 200 fish a day to catch their limit for their party. when you're catching and releasing that many fish, you're going to have an extreme amount of waste and loss to the fishery. And for me, taking granted of the fishery, that's what that is. That's taking granted of the fishery. The Maryland State needs to come up with a saying, hey, when you get the legal fish, don't throw him back. He's yours. And you'll stop a whole lot of this waste because that's what taking granted is. You know, taking it for granted. Just don't keep catching and catching and catching and releasing because I want a certain fish. I just want to hang out a couple more hours. That's, you know, do the right thing.
Dennis, hold on. Is there a question in there somewhere for Rudy?
Yes. Are you going to ever get it under control? Because this has been happening for 15 years, that amount of waste, and I know it. Because when I go across the Bay Crabbing in the fall, I'll be south on the down tide from Swan Point to Love Point, and them fish are floating belly up by the hundreds.
I got it, Dennis.
It's extreme waste. It is.
Well, let me ask you this, Dennis, and this might not set well with you, but are the hook and line commercial guys doing any of this?
I'm not sure. I'm a commercial guy. I don't do the rockfish part of it, but I know.
Uh-huh.
I love what I do as a living, and I know that sportsmen love what they do as a sport.
Right.
And collectively, all of us got to be able to police ourselves and be conscious of what we're doing to the fishery.
Yep.
When you take that many fish out of the fishery, you know, it's taking them out of the water.
Right.
It's already one thing. But
right.
When they're floating up, belly up, down below, and you can change the hooks. We got to change the perception. Don't try to change the gear in this case, times. I mean, yep, it probably could help. But at the same time, you can't stand there and catch 200 fish, 150, 20 to get one. You just can't do it. Get a legal fish. Be happy you had the day.
I got it. All right, Dennis, I appreciate that. Thank you for the information. Look, Dennis, I can't verify any of the numbers that you put out because I wasn't at the meeting and I haven't seen those numbers. But,
yep.
You know, I'm not doubting you. I'm just saying that seems like a lot of dead fish, but, and a big number on the recreational guy, 200 fish to catch a limit. So, I understand it, and I understand human nature. So let's hope that somebody can solve that problem. I just wondered if you had a question for Rudy because he's retired. He has no impact right now on the decision making process other than the research that he's done in the past. So
now I'm just saying I'm glad someone's addressing it.
Oh, they are. There's no question.
I'm just glad someone's addressing it and not kind of sweeping it under the rug or trying to play it down because it needs to be in the limelight of we have one of the greatest fisheries, the greatest base fishing for everything.
That's
for
right.
Any type of what you want to do. Let's enjoy it and let's preserve it too. And
all
I'm
right.
A commercial guy who wants to last.
I got it. All right, Dennis, let Rudy respond, please.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, we'll talk to you later. We're going to let Dennis go and see if we have any other callers on the line. But Rudy, response?
When we started doing the studies, we were using and still are using a 9% mortality on releases.
Right.
And back in the late 1990s, when I was doing these studies, if you applied the 9% mortality to the number of fish that were estimated to have been released, the discard mortality exceeded the entire commercial catch. That was hard for me to swallow. The discard mortality, if you apply a 9% mortality figure to fish that were caught and released by recreational anglers, the numbers of dead fish caught and released exceeded the entire commercial catch.
That's a sobering statistic, isn't it?
Yep. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And one thing, I've got a very good friend. She's a nurse, and she believes that catch and release fishing is animal abuse. And I really can't argue against that. I mean, I do it, but I can't argue against that. Why are we doing this? If you're catching and keeping, that's wonderful, but why are we torturing these fish sometimes?
Interesting concept.
Yeah.
Interesting concept.
I can't really argue against it, but I do it.
Yeah. I guess as recreational anglers, you know, we get caught in that thing about, you know, we got to have a limit to have a good time. You got to
right.
kill a turkey to have a, you know, good hunt. You got to kill a deer to have a good, you don't. And as you age, as you get older, like me, you know, you get out of that mentality, but you know, about having to succeed every time you go out. and you learn, you know, I don't really need to take that. I don't really need to take that dough just because she walked into the setup. I don't really need to take that 4 point because he's standing there. You get a little more selective as you get a little older.
Mm-hmm. A little more respectful of life.
A little bit more respectful. And I think it comes with knowledge of conservation of the species and understanding a little bit about biology and conservation and so forth, you know. And you know, there are just... How do you educate the public as to what's going on? We did it once with a 5-year closure.
Yep.
And you would have thought when we came back from that people would have been more conservation minded.
Yeah. And they were at first, because the first couple of years we had a spring season.
Right.
I guess managers thought they were doing the right thing by having a very high size limit, which meant you had more discards. And
that's
I was
true.
Bothered by the fact that when we went from an 18 to a 20-inch size limit, even to a 19, if your concern is dead discards, why are you creating more discards?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. Rudy, let me talk about Clyde Sports Shop for a little bit and our friends at Battery Warehouse, and we'll come right back to you here shortly. I want to talk about, you know, we use Menhaden for chubbing. Let's talk about Menhaden a little bit when we come back.
Okay.
All right.
We can do that.
All right. Sounds good. 410 WCBM 680, 410-922-6680. If you'd like to talk to Rudy, you're more than welcome to do that. Ask a question, please. So let's talk to Clyde Sport Shop. We're going to ask them a question. Are you open? Yep. You got bait? Yep. You got rods and reels? Yep. You do rod and reel repair? Yep. Well, let's flesh those out a little bit. If you need fresh line, they'll wind line on your spools. No question about it. Sometimes that's where I stop to get my line replaced on my fishing reels. Do they have great spinning reels and rod and reel combinations? Yep. They got the pen reels on sale. No, they don't have them on sale. I'm sorry. They've got the pen. I'm reading from an old ad. Sorry. They got the pen reels featuring the Battle 2 series. There's about 6 or 7 reels in this series from every size, from light to, you know, heavy duty. They've got the Fluger spinning reels also available. They feature the President series, and those are great spinning reels. They've got the Ugly Stick rod and reel combinations. They're really nice. Kids combos. Now that you can take the kids out fishing or not in school, stop by and stock up on some kids fishing supplies and teach your kids how to fish. Nothing wrong with that. If you're looking for a step up on a fishing rod, check out the line of St. Croix rods too. Live and frozen bait, fishing license, rod and reel repairs, circle hooks, and everything for every other type of fish. 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway, exit number 9. Phone number is 410-242-6108, 410-242-6108. That's Clyde's Sports Shop since 1957, open 7 days a week, and you'll be glad you did. We'll be right back after this.
Well, the weekend underway with some sunshine to enjoy today in Baltimore. Last night, all the storms stayed north of us, Pennsylvania and New York, and a low for tonight at around 60 degrees after we reach the low 80s this afternoon. We're mostly cloudy Sunday, 71 degrees, and then we're watching an area of low pressure. Hurricane Center is watching this also come up from Florida up the eastern seaboard. Northeast winds for us Monday, Tuesday, and looks like some half-inch to 1-inch rainfall totals. I'm Scott Laurie Moore at the Weather Channel on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, Get to the battery warehouse near you.
Hi, this is Sean Casey.
Hi, I'm Bruce Elliott.
We'd like to thank you for listening to The Morning Drive every weekday morning from 6 to 9.
You know, it's where we come together to hear the news.
And talk about it.
To share our stories and concerns.
And figure out how we're going to beat this invisible enemy.
We'd like to thank our sponsors who make it all possible.
And remind you to continue to support them during these tough times.
Above all, we'd like to thank you for your support.
Baltimore is listening to Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Basis at the tackle shop. I got a charge account running up nonstop. They ought to give me my own parking spot. I can't fit another plug in my tackle box. It's always under construction for all my weapons of mass destruction. I got buzz baits and Zara spoots, pumpkin seeds and flutes, booyah crawfish jigs. I got a 7-foot flipping stick, all the soft plastics to hook one on a Texas rig. My wife stays on me and my banker just told me that he's working on a tax deduction for all the money I'm dropping on my weapons of mass destruction.
All right, weapons of mass destruction. I don't think that's what the catch and release guys are all about, but at least it rhymes. Rudy, welcome back. Hello, Rudy, welcome back.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right. We have a caller on the line. We have Dale on the line. Good morning, Dale.
Good morning, Alan. Rudy, how are you?
Good morning, Dale.
Hi, Dale.
Good morning, Robin. Hope your grandson's doing well.
He is awesome.
That's good.
Yeah.
Rudy, question. As memory serves, and mine's not very good anymore, but most of the stuff that you all did was above the bridge, correct?
We did some of it at Love Point, some at Pools Island, and we did some down in the mouth of the chalk tank.
Okay. Any major difference geographically in results with respect to above the bridge versus below the bridge?
No, because the years that we did the study above the bridge, we had sufficient salinity in the bay so that the release mortality of the shallow hooked fish was still quite low.
Okay.
The word salinity escapes me sometimes. Salinity is... A big factor. I got it.
In fact, our hatchery guys, when they're transporting striped bass from wherever they catch them in town nets, they add salt to the water.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a study that shows in Southern California with freshwater striped bass, if you acclimate them after being caught and you release them into a tank with some salinity, it greatly enhances survival.
Really?
Yep.
Rudy, was anything done with respect to bait? I assume most of the bait was menhaden for the chumming, but I didn't know whether you saw any differences if people used different types of bait.
No, we tried to keep things consistent and just stuck with chunks of menhaden.
Yeah. I guess that's the most common chum that people use.
That is correct, yeah.
So, okay. Well, Al, I'll tell you what, work that Rudy did over the years, not just with... striped bass, but with a lot of other catch and mortality is the basis of a lot of the management that's currently utilized by the department. So, if you talk about biologists that made impact, Rudy's one that really stands out.
Well,
Dale, you're the one that set me up at the Hickory Shad, American Shad.
Well,
introducing me to
true.
Those anglers, getting me started.
Don't sell yourself short there, Dale. You were there for 30 some years, and you were the finfish manager of the Chesapeake Bay. So,
you're only as good as the people you work with, Alan.
Working with people like Rudy
made it a whole hell of a lot easier. So.
Dale and I, we were hired the exact same time back in 73.
We took the test at the same time, so.
Yep. And Rudy, Dale was my supervisor.
Dale was my supervisor for a number of years, and I was a one-person project. But I'll tell you, I never wanted her for help.
Well, the thing is, I just I'm smart enough to realize, Alan, you just stay out of the way.
Well, that's sometimes a good manager, that's for sure.
Rudy, I gotta mention real quickly the couple times I went chumming. I don't know whether you remember the time with Julie and the cantaloupe chum. And we'll leave it at that. We'll leave it at that. That was most interesting.
Cantaloupe chum. All right. Well, sounds like something you would do to trap a groundhog.
Rudy, give my best to Debbie.
I shall do that. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Dale. Appreciate it.
I will talk at you. See you now.
All right, buddy. Talk to you later. Thank you. All right. We have, Rudy, we have a question from a caller named Jim from Glendon. Good morning, Jim.
Hi, good morning. I have a question about shad catch and release fishing. It's 14th last couple of days to get out and catch a couple, and they're magnificent fish, and thinking that they've swam all the way in from the ocean, and I'm catching them, and I look at them and let them go. And do we have much of a concern with mortality for shad catch and release fishing?
Good question, because the first two studies I did were hickory shad and American shad catch and release fishing, and mortality among hickory shad is basically zero, and with American shad, again, less than 1%. So the conditions under which they're caught, cool water, cool air, artificial lures, survival is very, very high.
Well, that's great to hear, because they're really fun to catch.
Yes, they are.
And I also unexpectedly caught, I guess I think it's called a gizzard shad or a mud shad. Are they migratory, or are they fish that are always in the bay?
They're pretty much residents, and I'm not sure what they're really good for. The most commercial fishermen don't want them for, like, you know, for bait. They did find a market for them in the southern state as crawfish food. But
they have a very bad reputation.
What, mud shad? Aren't they also used for the big blue cats?
Yes, they are. You are correct.
For bait.
That's something new.
Yep.
Okay, well, great. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate the good question. All right. Rudy, I think we have somebody else on the line here. Let me check my magic text machine. Oh, Captain Don. Good morning, Captain Don. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Alan. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning.
Beautiful morning. And you have a wonderful guest. Man, I tell you, that guy's got some knowledge. And I'm glad he's sharing it with everyone, even though he's quote-unquote retired. Every time he talks, he is just educating everyone.
That's
but,
correct.
I'm calling on behalf of some older anglers, been around a long time, and they're adamant about this point. And human factors, acknowledging human factors, is it as simple as identifying a season and everyone gets and can catch an 18-inch fish, and that's it, one fish a day, minimum 18, learn about the catch and release, trophy season, identify the season, minimum of 18, one day per person, and that's it. Is it that simple?
I would certainly support that. I think the size of them should be lowered.
I kind of lost you. I'm on the phone.
I support that. I think the size limit should be lowered to 18.
Yeah, but identify the season, whether it starts in April and November, no cutout periods, no blackout. That's what it is all year. Minimum of 18, one per person. And these guys, these older guys, they make a lot of sense when they talk about their history, you know, in the bay and in the tributaries. And I don't know, it just seems I'm a bit under the weather this morning. I'm sorry.
I sound a little down there, buddy. I hope it's something.
No.
Okay.
Something benign.
Yeah, benign. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's the point that I was trying to get across and get a good answer from someone who has walked the walk, as they say. So.
Got it.
Okay.
All right, one fish year-round, 18 inches minimum, done.
That's it.
Got it.
Per day. Okay. All right, take care, brother.
All right, Don. Thank you,
buddy. Take care of yourself, Don.
And lady, okay.
Bye-bye. All right, man.
Thank you.
Take care. Captain Don, sorry to hear he's feeling bad. So.
Yeah.
Indeed. So, Rudy, we use chum. Dale mentioned using chum
Menhaden
for chum, yes. And, you know, you walk in the store, you got any chum? Yeah, they hand you a 10-pound bag of ground-up chum, or they hand you a flat of frozen alewife, and you go on your way. Alewife, Bunker, or Menhaden, it's all the same thing. Bunker, New Jersey, it's Menhaden everywhere, and it's Ly here. So tell us a bit about Ly and why we use Ly for chum. How much Ly do rockfish eat, and a little bit about Ly or Menhaden biology.
Okay. To correct nomenclature, alewives are actually a herring. It's called the alewife herring.
Okay.
Alewife is a local name for menhaden. Menhaden, alewife are two different fish altogether.
Right, but we use them interchangeably here in Maryland when it comes to...
Yes, we do, yep.
And all alewives and alewife, all different,
yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
But it's menhaden.
Yes, that is correct. That is
but the alewife, herring is a different, completely different species than the menhaden. Got it.
Correct. Yes, okay. Menhaden are my favorite fish because people talk about how important oysters are in terms of filtering the bay.
Yep.
And they can do 50 gallons of water a day. Menhaden, adult menhaden, can do like 80 gallons a day. They're extremely important not only for filtering the water. Obviously, food fish, they provide food for stripers, sea trout, bluefish. And I would say menhaden are probably the preferred food for striped bass.
Back up.
Okay.
50 gallons a day per oyster, 80 gallons a day for an adult menhaden.
Yes, because if they're mobile, they're moving through the water, so they can encounter more water, falling. But yes, they're very, very important.
We saw a school of menhaden at when we were in Tennessee at the aquarium down there, and I got a video of them opening their mouths and feeding and filtering and that type of thing. Fascinating to watch if you ever get to see that,
yeah.
On a video or in person. So I'm sorry to interrupt, but okay, I just wanted to make sure I heard you correctly, and that was for our buddy Mark in Delaware as well. So.
Yeah, I enjoyed his phone call this morning. He really sparked my enthusiasm.
Good. Glad to hear that. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did a presentation a little while ago. I was taking a course at the Environmental Center, and I had to do a presentation, and I chose menhaden, and I was doing research, and I was astounded to hear that quantity of water goes through.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
But they're in trouble because of that fishery down in Virginia. I support commercial fishing when it's appropriate.
Right.
I don't believe that fishery is appropriate.
Okay, so that has a little bit to do with the life cycle of the menhaden, right? And that's where
correct.
I was trying to go with that in this limited amount of time. Give us the 5-minute tour of the life cycle of menhaden.
Okay, menhaden spawn off the continental shelf. They are what's called broadcast spawners. They don't build nests of any kind. They just release their eggs and sperm into the water. Fertilization is random. And it is amazing. I was talking to you yesterday about this reverse current coming up the eastern side of Chesapeake Bay. It transports baby crabs, baby menhaden, because crabs also spawn at the mouth of the bay.
Right.
And this reverse current brings these little fish up the bay. I spent 10 years on the Choptank River in the spring doing work on striped bass reproduction. And the menhaden spawned for like November through March. And in April, we were finding baby menhaden as far up as Ganey's Wharf, Tuckahoe Creek.
Really?
Yep. And the first 25 years I worked for DNR, my job responsibility was fish health investigations, which included fish kills, disease problems, things like that. And back in the 70s and early 80s, menhaden population of the babies, they called them peanut menhaden, was astronomical. There were so many kills involving low dissolved oxygen in the Western Shore tributaries in those years, tens of thousands. In fact, Maryland has the dubious distinction of having the single largest pollution-rated fish kill ever. Back River, north of Baltimore, receives the discharge from Baltimore City sewage. Back in the 70s, they were woefully overloaded, and they only had secondary treatment. Back River looked like pea soup. In August of 1974, we had a fish kill, an overnight fish kill of exclusively menhaden,
41 million fish.
Really?
Overnight. Yes. I mean, I have photographs of it, and the residents were just distraught is an understatement because the odor is horrible.
Wow. I don't doubt, it doesn't surprise me, unfortunately.
Yeah. When we get together to give you guys the book, I'll bring some photographs. You'll be astounded at what it looks like.
I would love to see that.
That would be great. That would be great. Appreciate that. So we do have a question, Rudy, on circle hooks from Chuck. He wants to know what size circle hooks were used for the study, and do you recommend, and what do you recommend for live lining?
We only used Mustad circle hooks. I was told not to use different brands. We didn't want to do any kind of competition like that. 8 and 9 aught circle hooks by Mustad is what we used.
Repeat that again.
8 and 9 aught circle hooks by
eight
Mustad.
8 and 9 aught.
Yeah, 8 aught and 9 aught.
That's a pretty big, it is. Pretty big hook.
Well, we caught the majority of the fish that we caught were less than 18 inches, so it catches small fish too.
All right, and now what do you recommend for live lining?
I would do the same thing.
Same thing? 8 or 9, yeah. 8 aught or 9 aught circle hooks. Got it.
Yeah. The smaller circle hooks are less effective in reducing deep hooking.
Mm-hmm. Because the fish can swallow the bait and the hook at the same time.
Yep.
Got it.
Yep.
Whereas with a bigger hook, they tend to... I got it.
We use charter captains to take us out and fish. We had people from the MSSA, the CCA, DNR, outdoor writers come out and participate. And the charter captains were very anxious to go places to only catch big fish. And I said, let's just catch what we catch. The smaller fish, I'm interested because they are mandatory releases.
Right.
I'm as interested in them as I am in the big fish. So probably 90% of the fish that we caught in this study were less than 18 inches.
Wow, that's good to hear. Good to hear. And, you know, I mean, people tend to use a smaller hook just for convenience in a lot of cases when a bigger hook would work better. You know, when we fish for smallmouth, you know, on a tube bait or something like that, we use 4-aught and 5-aught hooks, you know, for bass. And easily hook small fish with a big hook like that, you know. Whereas when I grew up as a kid, it was number 10 or 12 for trout and number 8 for, you know, and then the bass. Boy, if you used anything, you know, bigger than a number 2 eagle claw, what are you trying to do? So, but it's amazing how things have evolved and our knowledge has evolved. No question. So, hey Rudy, let me talk about Clyde Sports Shop one more time, and then we'll come back and wrap it up. I appreciate the information on both species, the striped bass and the menhaden. So,
my pleasure.
Yes, sir. Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne. They have those big old 8-aught and 9-aught circle hooks if you want to do some live lining or chumming. And tell them Rudy sent you. right? Kids fishing combos, for sure. The kids are out of school, and, you know, they're allowed to go with you to go fishing now. So why not take a kid fishing when he's done with his math lesson? Right, Robin?
Yep.
That's for sure. Give them a little reward for doing their homework or something. That's a great idea.
Kara wants to learn to fish.
Well, she will be more than glad to teach her. So, kids combos are sometimes specific or just in general. But they do have kits for trout and bass and catfish and panfish and even more there. Clyde Sports Shop. Ugly stick rods and reels, St. Croix rods, no question. Live and frozen bait, minnows. Chum, I'm sure, circle hooks for rockfish, as we mentioned, and everything else for any kind of fishing, including anything you want to fish for in Maryland. I don't know what else to say about Clyde's. I do know what to say. They have everything you need for crabbing, too. All the trot lines, all the trot line parts, all the bait, all the chum. You name it, they've got it at Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. 410-242-6108 is their phone number. Stop by and see them. They're open 7 days a week. Chris, you got anything, or can we go right back to Rudy? Hello, Chris.
Yeah, you can go right back to Rudy.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, Rudy, we have a couple minutes left. Any closing remarks, sir?
I would just say that people who are fishing, either, you know, catching and keeping or catching and releasing, be aware of the conditions that you're fishing in, and if the conditions are conducive to a high mortality, limit the number of fish you catch.
Boy, that's good advice.
That's kind of what I was saying.
Yep, I agree with you, Robin.
No, that's what you were saying.
Sorry.
It's all right. You can't talk about turkey hunting, but you can talk about fishing, and that's good. Yeah. Yeah.
I've been fishing since I was three. My first thing I caught, Rudy, ever, a snapping turtle. Still have pictures of me reeling a snapping turtle.
Rudy,
shallow hooked.
Rudy, you know Dale was your boss, right?
Yes, he was.
Yep. You know who Dale's boss was?
Nick Carter.
You know who his boss was?
Rob's father.
That's right. Yeah. So I got to be a little careful here. I'm an ex-secretary of the Department of Natural Resources in the family. So anyway, Rudy, I appreciate you joining us this morning very much. A lot of good knowledge, a lot of good comments, actually, emails and text, saluting your expertise and so forth. John B. said you know more words than Webster. And I remember that TV series, you know, Webster, and you do indeed have more words than Webster.
Oh, my
sure.
gosh, Alan.
What?
Nothing.
Isn't that what John B. meant? He meant the guy with the dictionary. Never mind. Anyway, Rudy, thank you so much.
Rudy, my best to Debbie, and you will see you soon, okay?
We'll see you soon, bud. All right, take care. Bye-bye. Well, there's the music again.
We survived another one.
I think we thrived.
I thought today was good.
It was a good day. All right, look, say your words.